Hey, thanks for joining me today on the How to Brand My Church podcast. This is episode 6 with Michael Persaud. Today we're going to be tackling the big idea of how do you build a highly motivated culture where people are passionate about the vision. By the end of the episode today, I want to show you how to leverage the power of story to move people in specific directions. In fact, I've invited Tim Flick to join me in front of the microphone. Tim is a good friend of mine, and in fact, him and I worked together to produce media, and he's a big part of the How to Brand My Church podcast and the howtobrandmychurch.com blog. So he's going to come in front of the microphone. I'm going to ask him about something he's an expert in, and that is producing videos, and his background's in video production. And him and I get to go out from time to time and do one of the most amazing things we get to do, and that is to tell stories. We'll be able to interview someone and have them tell their story of what God has done in their life, and then we get to create something artistic out of that. And it's a very moving and passionate presentation of the gospel in just a different way. And I love to be in an audience when we show these stories. If I have the opportunity to be in the audience, and I just like to watch people respond to the videos, because they do. They respond. In about 3 to 5 minutes, we can create this compelling story where people are engaged and connected with what's happening on the screens. They're emotionally involved. In fact, we'll see tears. We'll see laughter. We'll see people clapping and even saying, cheers as they're watching the videos. And at the end of it, there's just applause and different things, different reactions that can happen. Because stories are powerful, and people can relate, and they can connect with stories in a way that's not possible from maybe a direct message from the stage or any other way, really, except for to tell someone's story. So I'm going to talk with Tim. We're going to break down the method to telling a great story. So if you know the formula, you'll be able to pull together great, compelling stories, and you'll be able to know when you hear something. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a conversation with someone, and they begin to tell me about something, and I can begin to say, hey, pick out in my mind that's going to be a great story if we ever told a video of that, because it has all the different components of it. So I want to make sure that you understand today what the components of a great story are, so that you can put together moving stories that aren't super long. They can be 3 to 5 minutes long or 7 minutes long, and have a really powerful impact to help your message get across. So let's get into it today. Here is Tim Flick, and we're going to be talking about the power of story. All right, well, I'm here today with Tim Flick, who is, he works with me, actually. We've been working together now for almost over a year, and we've been doing media creation, and his background's in video production. So I wanted to bring him in today to talk to us about producing great stories. So Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. It's a little cold.
Yeah.
Snowing outside today. We can see that outside the window, but man, yeah, it's going good.
Good. So, hey, we were just talking about how we kind of work together to produce media and videos and everything. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, I graduated from Evangel University down in Springfield, Missouri. There I had a broadcasting degree, did a lot of live production video there. I got hired at a church here in Kansas City, a big mega church, and worked there as a creative director. Did a whole lot of running the media department, doing just about anything you can think of. And from that point, went on to help plant a church here in Kansas City, Summit Park Church, which listeners might remember from episode 1 that we had talked about. So I've been a big part of that, helping with all the media communications there. And at the same time, been working with you, just kind of doing our thing with all the media and everything. So yeah, it's kind of a little bit about what I've been doing.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to work together. We're both super passionate about just churches and branding and helping them to pull that all together so that their media helps them to really highlight what they do really well in that community. So more people are able to hear the message that they have that's unique to them, and then respond to it in whatever way, whether it's a salvation or giving or anything like that.
Yeah, it's been really incredible just running into different churches that everybody's unique, and they all have different perspectives, but they all have one vision that they're all trying to fuel, which is really cool that God provides these different outlets for these different types of people. So that's something that is really cool. I like to just see in the way we can work with different people doing the same vision, but just in a whole bunch of different ways. It's really cool.
So yeah, I wanted to get into the whole power of story and like how stories help the churches and their brand. And when we're talking specifically about videos. So Tim, can you kind of introduce us to this idea of story and how it can be leveraged?
Yeah, so what we like to do, even at our church, we really like to tell stories at like life change in the church that we're at. So any church has, you know, whether you're 10 people, 500 people, 1,000 people, you're going to have incredible stories. Someone that has come into your church that's been totally downtrodden, have terrible things happen to them that get changed by God and by what your church is doing to reach them. What we like to do is really focus on video to tell those stories and fuel the vision of that church, because that is that's just a thing that when people see those, they can connect, like, oh, I've been there, or I'm going through something, and that'll get them just engaged right away in your church, whether it's their first time or they've been there for, you know, 3 years.
Yeah, people tend to believe stories. That's kind of the cool thing about it. It's like you don't have to like prove your point or something. It's like, this is my story, this is what happened. So people believe it.
Yeah, so that's why we really, really stress the importance of video in your church. We do that quite frequently at our church on a Sunday morning. But something like the vision and the power of a video story is going to provide something that, you know, a brochure or even the sermon can't really convey on a Sunday morning.
So there's a certain way we want to tell stories too, like to get that emotional connection. Because it's amazing how you could take 3 minutes and put a video up there with a story and somebody can connect with that. Like you can see tears on faces, you can see laughter. There's this connection that can happen in a very, very short amount of time if you do it right. So let's talk about the story structure and how we, so we work together, we work with churches, and we come in, a lot of times we'll come in and be like, hey, that's a great story, we should create a video about that story, and we love doing that. So just on a personal note, that's probably one of the most amazing things we get to do.
Yeah, I love telling stories, like something that even in the office, just every day we'll talk and be like, hey, you remember when we did that, or remember that family that we, you know, shot a video for 6 months ago or anything like that. And we just go, yeah, that was so cool. And we talk about the different elements that we got to put together. And even if we've run into those people, you know, in real life, and they still connect with us on those stories that we shot. And it's really cool because we do it, you know, for our job, we do it for the church to do that stuff. But on a personal level, it's really cool because then we start to get to know those people.
Yeah, it's cool. I remember one time you were, we were telling this story and this guy's like, hey, I'm a pilot. And then like, you're like, really? Can you take me up in your plane? And then he's like, yes. And yeah. Then you got to go up and fly with him.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes so you can check out that video. But one of the people from a church here in Kansas City, he was a kid from Uganda that got adopted by a family. And it's a really incredible story. But yeah, when he was like, I fly, and I was like, we're going to go in this plane and shoot some video in there. And that's something that was like a highlight for me last year, just to be like, you know, we always go into people's houses and do stuff, but let's be creative. And we got to go to this airport and do all this cool stuff. And that was, that was a real cool experience.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into like environments and stuff at later on in our conversation, but that's a big part of what we do when we tell stories. And what you want to do when you tell stories is get into their world. It's great to bring them to a studio and have them talk about stuff, but man, I tell you what, it's another level of when you go to where they are or where that story takes place and you tell it from that perspective. When we do a story, there's a process we start off with called a pre-interview. So usually I do the pre-interview process, and what I'll do is I'll call up the person that's the prospect to tell their story. And what you want to do with the pre-interview is qualify that person to make sure they're going to be able to tell a good story. Because not everybody can tell a great story. Even if they have a great story, sometimes it doesn't come across. And you want to be careful that it comes across well on camera.
Exactly. And yeah, so sometimes what we'll do is someone may have an incredible story, but they may not be, you know, you love them and they're great people, but they just may not either want to be on camera or do great on camera. So a good alternative to doing anything like that, maybe we want to still tell that story, but we can put it in a blog post or something in social media. That's a more creative way to just like say, okay, well, this won't work on video, but let's still share this in a way so you don't just have to discount their story or the person themselves.
And there's a formula when we're doing this pre-interview. So we're talking to them about this stuff, and then Pixar actually uses it, and that's kind of where I heard about it. But it's a classic story formula, and we kind of lean into it. We'll get into it a little bit, but the big idea behind it is that you were this way, then God did something, and now you're like this. So that kind of sums up the formula. So as I'm doing the interview, the pre-interview, I just want to make sure that those elements of the formula are in the story so that it's going to engage the audience. So there has to be like a climax, something that people can kind of build up to and as they're watching it, and then there's a resolution and a moral to the story that helps people draw it. And that's how you create that emotional connection in such a short amount of time.
Exactly. And a lot of times with these videos, that climax is them finding God, them finding some kind of resolution and peace in their relationship with Christ. But what's cool is just to not, we don't get stuck on, they don't have to have a perfect ending. We have to find that specific crisis and resolution towards the end that really helps encap that story. So it could be someone who's a drug addict that just got done, but they're like on fire for God, but they're like, yeah, I still struggle with it and I still have those issues. And that helps even keep the reality of those people. So it's not, you know, just a cookie cutter, you know, hey, I was doing this and now God saved me and now I'm a perfect person. I was like, nope, nobody's going to be perfect, but they provide reality in those stories that they share.
They were one way and then God did something and now they're better off for it. They're not perfect, but they're better off.
Exactly.
So the pre-interview is a very important part of the process. You want to qualify them and then make sure they can tell a good story and that story has the different elements in it. And I wanted to take a moment just to go through those elements like really quick so that whoever, as you're listening to this and if you're putting together the video for your church, I want to make sure you have those elements so that you can lean into them. So the first element that that's part of the story structure is the exposition. So Tim, this is where we get to meet the person. We want to create a connection between the audience and that person. Make them, like you were saying, make them feel like a real person. Mm-hmm. You know, they work at Applebee's, or you know, you kind of build the life of who this person is.
Yeah. So it's like even if they work at Applebee's, that's important because that's who they are. You know, they could work there. They can work at they can be a trash man. They can be a post office worker. Like it doesn't matter because they're important. And that's why, like, when we're shooting the B-roll and shooting the extra video for that, you know, if they work at Applebee's, we're going to Applebee's to shoot them working at Applebee's.
And eat something.
Yeah. We'll eat something. But we just, it's important. So it's like, we don't ever want to discount anything from what they do, because it helps really frame who they are. So like that video we shot with that kid who got adopted from Uganda, him being a pilot is what he is. And so we want to show what he is doing. Getting that exposition at the beginning of who they are helps frame that beginning of that story and really helps put it on a personal level, because you're going to have people at the church that connect with them. So you're not going to just go into them just being at home doing nothing.
So once you get to know them a little bit, the next thing is the inciting incident. So this is where the story begins, really. It's like, hey, things were going fine, or this is my life. And then something happens. Bad news, the medical report, the overdose, whatever the story might be, this is the inciting incident where things really change. So the inciting incident starts things off, but then progressive complications is the next thing we get into. So that's where our story begins to get more and more complex. Usually there's two or three things we want to build on top of that first incident that makes a story more engaging.
Yeah, so like with David's story, with him being in Uganda, we really went and tried to search what was going on with him while he was down there. So a couple of those things that he was having issues with was his dad had passed away from AIDS, and his mom was sick, slowly dying of the same disease. And even a third thing was his basic lack of hope being in Uganda, not knowing like where food's coming from, just impoverished neighborhoods and everything like that. And it wasn't a very positive environment for him. So those were just a few things with that specific video that we ran into.
Right. And those complications help to draw the audience in more and more. They're like, it emotionally creates more of a connection to David. You really are like, wow, you know, I feel for this guy. How's he ever going to get out of this thing? And that sets up the crisis or the climax. This is the fork in the road moment where the storyteller has to make a decision. What are they going to do? Are they going to stay on the same course? Or are they going to do something different that changes the course of their story? So this is where everything, it boils down to this. This is like the big moment right here. The decision, you're building up to this moment.
So with David, the climax with his story was the parents in the U.S., finding him as a kid to adopt. And so they went through the process of doing a Compassion International type of thing where they would just communicate with him through letters and all those things and not actually see him. But they made the decision to actually go to Uganda, meet him, build a relationship with him, which ultimately led up to what the climax would be, is them physically saying, we're going to adopt you and you're going to come live with us and live in the United States with us and be a part of our family.
The funny thing about this whole story is like, we didn't actually know that going into it.
Yeah, it was so crazy because everything he was saying was good, but we felt something was still there. Like we were like, we need to figure out what we're missing here. And we just on a whim were like, hey, well, let's just talk to his parents and see if they're good and wanting to talk to us. And they did, and they just talked forever, but it was good, and it filled that void that we were missing. The mom just started crying, thinking about it and everything. It just helped add even more to the story that was just so powerful.
Yeah, that was a great, like, happy accident, right, that took place. David had a good climax that we found, but then when we interviewed the parents there just on the spot, they provided this really nice climax of their journey intersecting with David's. So then after we have a climax, we need to resolve the story. So the next thing is a resolution. This is where the conflict is resolved and the tension that's created up until the climax is released.
Yeah, so the crisis in David's story, we've got two things going on. We've got his side in Uganda where he just has no hope. He doesn't know where his next meal is. He just doesn't know basically what's happening. But on the other side, he's got his adopted family in the United States that's trying to go through the court system and all these different litigation processes that are causing a ton of tension for his family to like adopt him and bring him into Uganda.
Yeah, they even had to like fly over there a couple times, I think, and talk to the courts and spend money doing that. And they had to live there for like 3 months. It was like crazy ridiculous what they had to do.
Yeah, they had a ton of different complications that kept piling on that the mom brought to us, you know, in the video. She just shared all that with us. And it was just, there was so much tension. And, you know, he wanted to come to Uganda. His mom was in agreement with that. They all were wanting this event to happen. And there was just so much tension of the government there basically just saying, you know, you're not going to get this kid. They kept saying that to the mom. You're not going to adopt him. We're not going to let this happen. And that just kept going on and on and on for months.
So then finally we hit the resolution where they get the approval. You know, it was kind of this dramatic build up to the courtroom. And finally the judge is like, okay, we're going to give it to you. And then the next thing we know, David's on an airplane flying home.
Part of that resolution is him seeing, being on an airplane. This is the first time he just knows, like, there's so much buildup, like, as every second that he's there in that plane, he's getting closer and closer to his family, his new family. And it was a cool thing to have them relive that. And luckily, they even had pictures from that we put in the video.
Right.
That we got to see just snippets of what that moment was for them, which is big for all of us who were just engaged in, you know, 5 minutes of the story. But for them, that's, you know, months, years of them trying to get something to happen. And that release is seen in those photos.
So the resolution releases the tension. We build up all this tension, and then we release it. So that creates a really good feel for the audience where they can connect emotionally with what's going on. So out of the resolution, we want to make sure that we get to the moral of the story. So what's the lesson that was learned through this story? So the audience has a very clear understanding of like what the purpose of the story is. So one of the powers of stories for the church is that you can leverage stories to get your message across. Instead of preaching it from the pulpit, your story gets the message across instead of in a very emotional way. So in our story of David, the moral of the story was kind of summed up by the mom at the very end.
Yeah, she was like, basically, you have to let God be in control. It's not going to be in your time all the time. You may want something to happen next week, but in God's plan is that this will happen in a year or this will happen in 20 years. We don't know how it works, but we have to continue to have faith and continue to trust in God that he's going to provide us what we need. And in their case, that was David coming to the United States and living with them.
Yeah, and the question that we use to kind of set that up, so at the very, very end of any interview, when we've gone through this emotional journey with the people we're interviewing, I'd like to ask the question, what do you know about God now that you didn't know about him before this journey?
Yeah, and it's really awesome when you bring that up, because we've done that so many times, just giving that last question. And I want to say almost every time we've turned that into a closing for that video, or it's a powerful thing, because that's a question that people probably don't expect to hear, and they have to just think about it on the spot, and they hear that, and it's pretty raw. Every time they do that, we get a pretty good response every time we ask something like that. So that's a good question just to throw out there after you're done with everything.
Yeah, so I agree. So the question again, in case you missed it, is what do you know about God now that you didn't know about him before this journey? And one of the things too that we try to do is we'll go through the story the first time in the interview process. We'll take about an hour. It takes a while to, hey, let's interview, go through this story with the people, have them tell everything. The first pass is usually the emotional pass. That's where you're going to be able to capture any emotion that's going to happen during that interview process. And then what we do is we take a timeout, pretty much. Take a bathroom break, that type of thing.
If it's Michael and I and second cameraman or an editor's there, we try to have someone at least taking some notes. So for instance, if they miss a beat here on a question that doesn't make sense, or the answer doesn't make sense to that question, we want to rehash that just to make sure we clarify that. You know, specifically just because we don't want to run into, you know, if it's 2 weeks later, we're editing this thing and we don't have that, then it might throw off the whole video. So you really want to just make sure, you know, all those different parts that we've talked about, having the complication, the resolution, and all those different bullet points that we brought up.
Right.
Those are really important. And having someone like an editor or someone on there who's going to be involved in post-production is pretty essential to for your process, because then you're going to end up with someone who already knows what's happening, knows the story and everything, as opposed to just dumping footage onto someone else to just go do it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's helped us quite a bit to have the editor actually there during the interview as maybe a cameraman or something, so they know what's going on. And then during that huddle between the two sessions, so we're doing the first session, it's kind of the long pass, it's emotional. The second pass is going to be a quick hitting, let's do it again. So we have that huddle to make sure, like Tim was saying, like on all angles we have what we need. So then we go through that second pass, we call back the person being interviewed, sit them down, and then we go through the story again, top to bottom. Second time through is just pretty quick. The first time takes about an hour. Second time, how long do you think the second pass takes?
It's definitely less. We'd probably take 45 minutes max, probably closer to 30 minutes to just get that, get those statements, you know, just one right after the other. And then that helps us get like a good beginning and ending if we want to add some more later from the first pass.
And I think the other part of it too is, so the interview is set up with the story structure we just went through, and then the edit is actually going to match that same story structure. So it's cool because you're working on this on both ends, on the beginning, on the front end and the back end, you're working towards the same thing.
Yeah, it's way, like I can't preface enough how essential it is to have that down from the get-go, because then it makes your editing process so much quicker, more efficient, and just easier to do. I've been a part of it before where we just will go shoot something on the fly and not really have a vision of what we want to do. And all this pre-production processing that we're doing really, really helps make that end product just go quicker and turn out better because we have that clear vision. It's like if you watch a movie, they always storyboard everything out. Yeah. They already do like photography beforehand, so they know where they're going and everything like that. So it's just that taking that same process into the church world and putting that into shorter 5-minute testimonies or anything like that, just going through that pre-production process really helps fuel that vision, just make it just pop way better.
Yeah. And just so you can catch it again, I'll go through the different parts of the storytelling that we talked about. So the first thing is the exposition, then the inciting incident, then the progressive complication. We hit the climax or crisis, and then resolution, and then the moral of the story comes at the very end. Hey, actually, just a little side note. I was just remember the one time we did that interview, and on the second pass, we're just kind of getting some quotes and everything, right? The Twitter version, quick version. The guy was like, yeah, I almost committed suicide. I was thinking about committing suicide.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was like...
Like, he didn't tell us that before.
Yeah, the first time he just talked and we were like, okay, this is cool. Yeah, man, you're getting emotional. We love it. This is good. You're telling a great story. And then the second time he was like, yeah, I thought about killing myself. And we were just like, whoa.
But we were playing it cool, though.
Yeah, like, in our heads, we're like, what is going on? We have no idea. And then... We were like, oh, okay, why don't you tell us a little bit more about what's going on there. And I mean, it turned out great, but it's stuff like that, you know, that if we had just gone through that first pass, we wouldn't, that may not even have been any part of that story that we had any idea of, and it just helped make it better. So doing like that second pass is a good idea.
So just to outline the process, just high level again, we do a pre-interview where we qualify them and kind of get some good notes about their story. Then we do the interview, whereas when we go to on location and shoot them and do the actual production of the story. And then there's a post-production or the edit. So there's actually three parts to this, this whole process that we're talking about. So Tim, before we move on, let's go into some of the equipment and our setup on how we do that. Can you walk us through your
setup? Yeah, so for the setup, we want to get a good location that is representative of the person or their story. So for David, like, we can't go to Uganda or anything like that, but we obviously would, the first low-hanging fruit would be go to his house, go to where the person lives. So we want to make it as easy as possible on them. So we would go into the house, find a good location that is interesting. You don't want to have like a white wall behind them or anything like that. You want to have you don't want to have anything crazy, but you just want to have something behind them that is interesting, has something good. And so what we would do is we'll use a low depth of field to blur that background out so there's no focus on that, and it's just to focus on the subject that we're talking to. Then from that location, what we'll do is we'll set up our lighting kit. We'll just probably do about a 3-point light system where we've got one in the front to the side and some backlighting just to fill him out a little bit better. So we don't want any crazy shadows or anything like that. We'll set up the camera in front of him, and the other way to make them more comfortable is we'll have a cameraman on the one in front of him, the one on the side, but then we'll have, which is usually Michael, but if it's an interviewer, we'll have them sit down, same eye level as the person that's speaking, and from there, they'll talk to that person so that we try to get them just not to engage with the cameras or anything like that. We want them to basically tell their story to someone, even though in reality, there's all this stuff around them we really want to focus in.
To recap on that, just real quick, because you went through a lot of stuff. We're doing it in the environment where that person's comfortable and an environment that kind of helps tell the story, flush it out. We're also setting up 3 lights around the person to make sure there's no shadows. Then we're setting up 2 cameras, so a primary camera that's somewhat head-on and then a secondary camera coming from the side. And then there's an interviewer who's sitting kind of in between the 2 cameras, kind of close to that primary camera. They're not looking at the camera. You were saying that helps them feel more comfortable?
Yeah, yeah. So we want to have that interviewer between those 2 cameras, and the person giving their testimony is looking directly at that person, and that really helps calm them down. And we typically will do some softball questions at the beginning too, which really helps just warm them up. So whoever's talking, even before we even start recording, we start doing that while we're setting up.
Yeah, and then talk about audio. That's a really important part.
Yeah, so with the audio, it's just really important to check out a few things. For one, we just set up a boom mic on a boom stand, a pretty simple set up just above them, make sure it's not in the shot and all that good stuff. Just we want to be pretty close to him and tilt it towards his chin so that the audio is coming in the right way, so we don't have any weird distortion or it doesn't sound like he's underwater or in a gym or anything like that. But one thing which is even we struggle with every single time is just making sure that there's no exterior noise beyond that. So if we are in a house, say the air conditioner might come on in the middle of them crying about a testimony and it almost just kills that video, we have to reshoot that or anything like that. So we want to always make sure that there's no extra noise, like an air conditioner, or if we're downstairs, people running around on the upstairs, or if a window's open, or if they're near a street or anything like that, cars honking, or we've been outside, you know, there's a point, like if you're outside, people are going to expect to hear noise. So that's always okay. So we don't want to stress too hard on that. But you know, if a guy with a motorcycle comes by while we're outside there, you're going to probably want to reshoot that. So those are just a few little tips.
Gotcha. So natural noise is okay, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
It's just that out of the blue noise that you want to avoid.
Yeah. If you're outside and you hear people talking, people understand that. It makes sense. It actually even helps sometimes. So we've shot videos where we were down downtown Kansas City and there's a lot of stuff happening. The audio is good on the subject, but you're going to just pick up all that stuff. And I think that's fine. If we're inside a house and it needs to be quiet, then you're going to not want to hear any of the rumblings or anything like that.
So I've learned a lot through the process just watching you do your setup. So when would you use a shotgun microphone versus using a lapel?
Yeah, we just like to use a shotgun boom mic, anything like that. That's almost my go-to for anything where we're shooting a static shot. So someone just sitting down, there's no movement, or if we got to bounce between two people talking, so we might have someone hold it and kind of hold the boom to the different people. Anytime we have movement as well, we really want to have that, because we're not going to have someone walking with the boom mic the whole time and try to catch up with them, and then you hear them moving and everything like that.
And I noticed you have a windsock on usually when we're outside on the boom mic.
Yeah, that makes a world of difference between using a fuzzy gray one, that's a technical term, right? Using one of those as opposed to just not having one, or the standard one that comes with that mic, makes a world of difference.
Yeah, because I've noticed, man, you've got these really clear, crisp audio, and it's like a windy day outside, and it's just a world of difference. So that's cool. So microphones and all that, it's very important to make sure you capture great audio. So let's talk about the equipment that we use. Can you start with the camera? Explain.
Yeah, everybody wants to focus on the camera. We use a Sony A7S. That is a really, really incredible camera for the size that it is. It's a DSLR camera, and it's the best thing we've ever used for low light. So especially with churches, we run into churches are really dark during worship or just poorly lit. And in that, we can crank that camera up pretty high and not run into that grainy noise that you run into when you bring any other, like a low-end camera or anything like that. Encourage anyone to rent one and check it out.
Well, that's a good point. You said rent. A lot of times we kind of explore new equipment by renting first, and then we can purchase after.
Yeah, that's a good thing. So there's a lot of places online or even local that you can find. But, you know, you could use a $10,000 camera that you may only want to use once, but spend like $200 or something like that. It makes you look more professional, and it helps add more to the value of what you're trying to do for your church or for organization or whatever you're doing that for.
And I think the Sony camera, that's the better of the camera that we use. Sometimes we'll use another camera to do like a secondary angle.
Yeah, we'll use a Canon 70 or a T5i. We'll use that for some extra B-roll, and we'll splice all that together and try to color grade it as best we can and go through that process. But yeah, we kind of mix and match every once in a while with our stuff, but we try to use that Sony as our primary for specifically testimonies and everything like that. We'll use a lot of different lenses. If we're gonna like run and gun, we wanna make sure we have a good wide angle lens with image stabilization. So then if you're gonna go in and edit, it's not all over the place. And we'll use a more cinema lens for the standard testimonies where they've got good depth of field, so everything's blurred in the background and you can really focus in on that subject that you're talking to. There's no real science that we've hit yet, so we're not perfect, but we really like to just find different ways to light those rooms. And so we'll use like a good fluorescent box light and some other light stands, like to set up a 3-point light system. Nothing crazy. We just, that's what we like, and we'll probably move to some different stuff over time, but that's what we use. And then just use a boom mic on them, or a lapel mic, whichever, you know, like we said earlier, whatever goes with the situation that we have.
So like you can get a 3-point lighting kit that's fairly inexpensive, maybe a couple $100 or something like that. Maybe a microphone. You want to spend a decent amount on a microphone, because that's, you don't want that to mess up on you.
Yeah, I think the simplest thing that I've learned is if we have a decent camera, decent lights, and a decent microphone, you're going to have something that's going to compel people and it's going to sound good. If any of those aspects are low or just not good, then it's going to take away from the story. You could have someone that's gone through drug addiction and been saved through God and is now running a rehab center, and it sounds great and it's a real awesome story, but if they sound like they're underwater or you can see half their face or if it's out of focus, then it's not going to matter what they say. So you really want to have those key components that look decent, and then as you go on in your experience, build on more and more of that. So you can work on getting better lights, setting light up differently, getting a better mic, getting better cameras, better lenses, and so on.
So what's the Sony you were talking about? What's the price range on that?
The A7S, well, they actually came out with a Mark II, so I'm sure this one has probably gone down in price, but for the body, it was about $2,500, and then lenses. We have two lenses. One, I think, was $900. The other was about $1,200, I believe.
And that camera was, you know, it's our better camera that we use. And then we have some kind of lesser cameras, I guess you would say, that help to shoot some of the B-roll.
Yeah, more entry-level cameras we have for extra stuff. But we'll, like anyone, you know, that's what we use now. You know, in 5 years, we're not going to use that. Right. It's just, it is ever-evolving, which is good, because we have to, us, you know, Michael and I, or anyone listening, you know, we just have to continue to evolve with those trends. Because the things that the Sony does are things that you wouldn't even think of doing, you know, a few years ago. The style of the shots that it gives you and everything like that, it's a totally different thing than what we would try to do later. So next year, we might use a different camera.
Right.
You know, it's just totally different every time.
But keep in mind, when we'll put that video, or you could check out some of our portfolio, we're not using like really high-end equipment to do what we do. The story is the important thing, and we just need to make sure it's told, and told in a way that's not distracting or anything like that. So you don't have to go crazy to get great equipment until you're ready for that and you're able to do that and step up to really great equipment. So like one thing, what are a couple of things that you are looking ahead to real quick, just like a camera-wise or equipment-wise?
Yeah, I think we want to start getting in some LED lights, probably get some battery-powered ones so we don't have to worry about plugging in. So if we're out in the field or something like that, we can have some good lighting as opposed to just making sure we hit it before the sun goes down or anything like that. Looked at a lot of Canon C100 cinema cameras, look really good. That would be more of the mid to high end. Obviously, if you know anything about cameras, you want to have a RED camera if you want to do 4K. Someday we'll get there. But I think those Sony A7S and C100s are really good for the cinematic look that a lot of churches are trying to do nowadays.
So that's a wrap up of our equipment and what we use to do what we do. We're not going to get super detailed into that. You can find that in other resources, or maybe we'll come back and do another podcast more detailed on equipment, but that'll get you going. So in conclusion, Tim was basically telling us that there's a power behind story and being able to fuel your vision by telling a great story. And there's a process that we've outlined to help you get that story told. The way to sum up that process is that you were this way, so the person in the story was this way, then God did something and changed it, now they're another way, they're better off because of that. So if you can capture that and get some equipment that helps you capture that clearly, then you'll be able to fuel the vision of your church by telling compelling stories.
Yeah, that's real good, and that's something that you can do. If you're a 50-person church, you're just one guy wanting to start a brand new church, or you've got 2,000 people, like this, that formula will work on so many different levels which is why we've been able to do that with so many different churches using that formula.
Well, thanks, Tim, for joining us on the podcast today. Tim is behind the scenes. He helps me put on this podcast all the time. It's our podcast. You know, it's a lot of effort from both of us to make this happen from week to week. And I wanted to interview him just on this idea of storytelling because he's so good at it. And we'll have him back. We'll have you come back and speak to some other things in the future. But just want to say a big thank you for making some time to join us today. That was great. We're going to do that again in the future. We're going to come and talk together on several topics as we continue creating episodes for the How to Brand My Church podcast. So today, I hope you have a good understanding of how you can leverage story towards your vision so that you can compel people, move people in the direction that you want them to go in. In fact, Jesus used stories all the time in Scripture. He used them as an illustration. He used it so that people can understand more clearly. It's one thing to give information, and it's another thing to show the impact that that information has on someone's life. And hopefully in this podcast, you can get a good understanding of what it takes to put together a compelling video. So we focused on videos and how you can create this production which allows you to tell these stories in a way that's very engaging, emotional, that allows people to connect in a very short amount of time. So in our podcast, I like to give a resource of something I recommend, something I came across that has been really helpful or impactful in my life. Today, I want to tell you about Donald Miller's book called A Million Miles in 1,000 Years. And it's about story. It's about creating a great story. In fact, it kind of starts off with this idea that he was having a movie made of his life, and the people that came to make the movie started to add all these fictional elements to it because his life was not worth telling in a movie. So he basically made a decision in that moment that he was going to start to live a life that was worth telling about. He was going to start to live a better story. And it's a really compelling book, a lot of big ideas about how to live a life that's worth telling to others, that makes a difference. And it's an inspirational read. It's a great thing to study the power of story through. So I highly recommend, especially on this episode, where we're talking about story and the power of story, highly recommend that you read it and then think about it in your own life or in the life of your church. How can your church have an existence where it makes a difference and it's worth telling the story? I'd like to encourage you to subscribe to our podcast and rate it if you can. We'd love to hear what you have to say about our podcast. And also visit us on our blog at howtobrandmychurch.com. In fact, we have a free resource that's related to our topic today. We've created a diagram and a breakdown of all the different steps of the classic story structure so that you can have that in front of you as you create these great compelling stories. It's just a way to remember all the different points that we talked about, so you have almost a cheat sheet to go by. So the blog is full of resources. We will continually release resources that will help you to build this brand and to get your message out there that compels people and drives people behind the vision that God has given you. So thanks again for joining us today on the How to Brand My Church podcast. I'll see you next time.